Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a media and entertainment marketing organization. And today I'm speaking with Courtney Monroe, President of National Geographic Global Television Networks. That family of networks seems to be growing, as is the content that you're producing. But before we even get to that, prior to becoming global CEO, you were the CEO of National Geographic Channels in the U.S., and you first joined the network as chief marketing officer. So I think that's really interesting because I just feel like the brand and the brand mission drives so much of the business and the programming. And I'm really curious to talk to you about that.
Yeah, it certainly does now. I will say that when I joined the channels as the chief marketing officer, the brand wasn't really driving the programming strategy. It was sort of a bit confusing to me as a marketing person. I have been a marketing person and involved in television marketing for 21 years. I started at HBO in 1998 in marketing, and I stayed there for many years and rose to the ranks of running marketing and digital at HBO. And then I came to National Geographic as a head of marketing at a time when the programming strategy was one that, from my perspective, was a bit misaligned from the brand. I came believing, as you did, as you just suggested, that sort of the brand so defines, the business and should so clearly define the content strategy. But at the time, for various reasons, the programming strategy was really more about chasing the audiences of Discovery and History and A&E and some of the, our closest nonfiction cable competitors who were enjoying a lot of success in the sort of low-cost reality television show business. And sort of that was the strategy that we were pursuing at National Geographic. We were far less successful at it, and I think that's because there was a disconnect with the brand. And I think brands really serve as organizing principles for viewers and consumers. They mean something, and people think of National Geographic with a very specific set of expectations for quality and distinctiveness and the types of stories that they would expect National Geographic to tell. We were a little out of sync, and as a marketing person, it was something that I kind of struggled with. Mm-hmm. But my job was to market our shows, so I marketed our shows. When I had the great fortune of being given a leadership position to run the channels, that was kind of the beginning of us shifting our strategy. It certainly wasn't just my vision. It was very much of a team effort, and with the great leadership and guidance of Peter Rice, who was running the Fox television business at the time, to pursue a strategy that really was much more in keeping with the brand, as you would expect. So that's what we're doing now, but interestingly, there was a time that we weren't.
It's interesting from our landscape view at CTAM, we've watched a lot of networks go off-brand and chase audiences or try to shift genre, and inevitably we also watch them start to try to come back. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that when you did assume the leadership position, you sort of put the programming back on track, got it realigned with the brand, and are now really picking up some impressive momentum as
Thank
a result.
You.
I also think that in this age of peak TV,
oh yeah,
where search, navigation, discovery is so challenging for viewers, mm-hmm. that having a really clearly defined brand has got to be able to help.
It does.
People are seeking what they expect to find from National Geographic, and that's got to help your ratings. It's got to help your engagement.
I think so, and I think that, again, I think because of the peak TV, they brand serve as organizing principles, right? And I think the only way to compete in this marketplace is with exceptional content that sits inside really vital, resonant brands. And that's what we're focused on.
So let's talk a little bit about what that looks like across the National Geographic landscape. You said in your comments today that you have long believed that the more people understand the world, the more they will care about it. That, I think, is becoming very evident in a lot of the programming that you just announced. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about some of those highlights and where you're headed with that vision and bringing that vision to life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that vision is one that exists at National Geographic writ large, even on the nonprofit side, the National Geographic Society. I think that's sort of been a long hallmark of National Geographic, which is, the more people understand the world, and their role in it, the more they're going to care about the world. And so that North Star is sort of not my North Star. I think that's the brand's North Star, and it has been since our inception. And so, you know, I think what we've done from a programming perspective on the television network is to take that very, very seriously and try to kind of pivot the content back to shows that feel aligned with the brand, but also are pushing boundaries in storytelling and creative ambition and entertainment in ways that have never been done before. So
you're seeking out relevant issues, relevant topics, but very much within the framework of what Nat Geo represents.
For sure. And we're also trying to be really entertaining, because that's how people determine whether they're going to consume content. Because in this era of peak TV, you can have really worthy, earnest, important content. But if it's not compelling and captivating and creatively ambitious and ultimately entertaining, no one's going to watch it. So I think for us, it's about threading that needle between, you know, embracing who we are as a brand and telling stories that live up to the promise of the brand, but also in really exciting and entertaining ways with real scope and scale and creative ambition.
It seems to be working, because since 2017, you've launched four of the most viewed series in network history.
Now five. We have a new one that has joined that list, which is The Hot Zone, which premiered over Memorial Day and is on track to be our biggest scripted show ever across the globe. So we've now launched five shows, the top five viewed shows in the history of our network.
And you're pushing into this entertainment area a bit deeper. You just announced two recurring series.
Mm-hmm. Both Hopefully, of which, in success, they will be recurring.
Well, they both sound tremendously exciting and very interesting. So
yeah,
I think
really
that bodes
excited.
Well for their potential future.
Yes,
I hope the audience feels the same way.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit about your thinking around pushing into that space and why you're looking at this, you know, sort of recurring series format now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we went out thinking, okay, we need recurring series. It was more, so we don't start with the genre, we're idea driven and we're creative driven, and what are great stories that we want to tell. The opportunity to have a recurring series on the network is great, because it can, you know, build from season to season in success and hopefully becomes launching pads to launch other seasons, other shows. But we have veered into scripted. You know, it's really only been 2 years since we launched our first, we've been in development longer, but we launched our very first scripted series just 2 years ago. Yeah, Genius. And that is recurring in the sense that it is an anthology series, so it comes back, but each season profiles a different genius. And we've had a lot of success, both audience interest as well as awards attention for our forays into scripted. And like I said, The Hot Zone, which was our 6-part limited series starring Julianna Margulies that just premiered on Memorial Day, on track to be our most viewed scripted series ever.
That's really
so
exciting.
We've definitely demonstrated that there is audience and advertiser demand for scripted. And so when we decided to option the book Barkskins by Annie Proulx, it's a 700-page book, so there is so much underlying material there, rich storytelling possibilities that in success could be 6 or 7 seasons of a show. And then The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. You know, there was a movie 30-some years ago, but it just scratched the surface of what Tom's book covered. So we are thinking about that series in a really audacious way and thinking about telling over multiple seasons the full story of the U.S. space exploration, which is tremendously exciting and very, very on brand for us.
It's a really interesting space that you're moving into.
Yes, no pun intended.
No pun intended. Okay, so a little bigger picture.
Okay.
These stats really sort of wowed me, because it's been 6 months since the last TCA tour, and you said, you know, we've been a little busy.
Yeah.
You joined the Walt Disney Company.
Yes.
You won an Academy Award.
I did.
You've received 15 Emmy nominations, and that's just a couple of the highlights of what's
yes.
been going on. So things are really sort of exploding right now. You're in a very pivotal moment.
We are. I think we are at a really interesting inflection point in the life cycle of this brand and business, and I think it has everything to do with being a part of the Walt Disney Company now.
So explain that to us a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. I mean, look, they are, I said in my remarks today, I think they are the winningest media company in the world. They are by far the greatest brand stewards on the planet. If you just look at Disney, if you look at Pixar, if you look at Marvel, if you look at what they've done with Lucas, if you look at what they've done with underlying IP like Frozen and The Lion King, I mean, nobody cultivates and nurtures and grows brands like Disney. And because we are such a brand-centric, you know, business, that's tremendously exciting for us. Our brands are really well aligned from a quality and storytelling perspective. The opportunities for us to scale our content, our talent, our IP across multiple platforms is really, really exciting, and they are huge supporters of what we're doing.
You're actually going to start to produce some content for specific platforms.
We are.
So talk a little bit about that strategy and what folks can expect from Disney Plus and the linear channels.
Yeah.
And some of the other
platforms. First, what I would say is we remain 100% committed to our linear channel business. There's absolutely no change to our level of investment, the number of hours we're producing, what our strategy is across the portfolio, Nat Geo Wild, National Geographic Channel, Nat Geo Mundo in the US. So there's no change to that. We're continuing to strive to be the world's leading destination for premium factual storytelling, regardless of platform. So, you know, we're staying the course when it comes to the linear business, which remains our core business. But what's just so exciting and what gives us such a tremendous advantage in what is a really shifting marketplace is being part of the Walt Disney Company that has made the number one strategic priority at that company is the launch of SVOD services, you know, Hulu, which now they majority own, and Disney Plus, which we will be a part of both. Our brand, actually, National Geographic content will exist on both Disney Plus and Hulu, and we are both developing and producing exclusive National Geographic shows for Disney Plus, and then a selection of our existing material will also ultimately find its way to both Disney Plus and Hulu in subsequent windows outside of the linear channel window. So the way I see this is just, this is a massive opportunity to scale our brand and to reach consumers wherever they are with our brand and our storytelling, and that just gives us a huge advantage.
And how do you view the big screen, small screen? Some of your content just needs to be big.
You know, I mean,
It's not mobile content. So are you looking ahead at little snippets and soundbite type content, or are you really going to stay the course and try to
Do a lot of short form, and but I think we're staying the course, and I think that we're just trying to tell great stories that are platform agnostic. And I think great storytelling is platform agnostic. I mean, did I love that audiences got to see Free Solo in an IMAX theater with a 100-foot screen? Yes, that film deserved to be seen on a 100-foot screen. But did my almost 13-year-old daughter watch it on her iPhone and absolutely love it? She did. It's fun.
As, you know, Science Fair, Free Solo, all of this content that crosses so many different age groups.
Yeah.
Redefines family viewing mm-hmm. in some really interesting ways.
Yes.
And I know that that isn't a term that's typically married to Nat Geo, but it's a really interesting space.
It is. And I think Disney Plus is very focused on, you know, really being a four quadrant
yes.
SVOD service. A lot of our content is, you know, fits perfectly with that. Some of our content is too adult, in which case it will be included in the Hulu service.
You could be a really significant driver for viewership
yeah.
in that space.
Exciting. I find it really exciting and energizing and like I said, a huge opportunity that gives us tremendous advantage to compete. The thing that I've been so energized personally by at Disney is they very much deserve their reputation of creative and operational excellence. Like, it's a very impressive company. And I've seen this just relentless pursuit of perfection, which, again, is really energizing for me. So,
quick question about documentary films.
Yes.
This is also a relatively new space
that you're pushing
into, but wild success in your first forays.
Yes.
In the past 20 years alone, the number of documentary films released in the U.S. has increased by 500%.
It's staggering.
So
released
what's going on?
In theaters, that doesn't even count the explosion of documentary storytelling across, you know, television or streamers. You know, somebody asked me today why I thought that was, and I didn't have a good answer. It's because I actually don't know. I mean, I do think that some of the greatest directors and filmmakers are actually playing in the documentary space now. So the quality of the filmmaking and storytelling is just the best it's ever been. And maybe there is an element of people just seeking the truth in this era of chaos and fake news and just a lot of...
You're not the first person I've heard that from.
Really?
So I think there's, I do think there's an underlying theme here where people are looking for a different type of entertainment, mm-hmm. a different
real
type of distraction,
about real
but real.
Yeah,
exactly.
Real.
I'm going to wrap by asking you, what's next?
Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, for me personally, I'm just maniacally focused on National Geographic winning and kind of living up to the expectations that people have for us, that Disney hopes for us. So I feel just a great sense of pride of what we're doing, and I have this terrific team that I want to lead and not let down. And so that's really my focus, and very grateful for the opportunity to lead this business at this exciting time.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.